there are 4,000 chemicals in every cigarette. 30 to 40 cause cancer. One is addictive. It's called nicotine. How addictive? 10 times more addictive than anything you can think of. But there's hope. On today's show, we'll explore nicotine withdrawal and what you can do about it. Stay tuned. Go Healthy for Good starts right now. I'm Dr. Nerida. Welcome to Go Healthy for Good. Thanks for joining us for this special series on smoking. Cancer. It's something we fear, but we never think it'll happen to us.
I'm Greg, and I am beating cancer. I've always been pretty fit. I've worked all my life, always been a hard worker. I've got three boys who I raised myself over 16 years. All got children now, so I've got three grandkids and one on the way. I've smoked for just on 41 years. I started with one couple of cigarettes a day, either stole one from my dad or from one of the mates. And then as the years go on, I smoke more and more until I would have smoked at least 50 cigarettes every single day. The last 2 years of my smoking life, I knew that every cigarette I was having was killing me. I knew every time, and I still did it. Of a morning, I would cough that bad that I'd hide myself from people. I'd stop doing a lot of stuff. I wouldn't go. I'd make excuses because I was not well and I knew that I couldn't walk the walk. I was coughing and spitting and I grabbed a rag out of the truck and spat into the rag and there was some blood there. I was coughing that bad that I actually passed out. I couldn't breathe and I swore I was going to die right there and then. Like, I wasn't just going to collapse. I was finished. I was going to die in the middle of the bush. I've made a decision that I needed to stop smoking. I guess knew I've damaged myself. I need to pull up, do something about it while I can. One night I coughed from 9:30 that night until 9:45 the next morning. So much so that I ended up at the doctor's the next day. That was the first time I went and admitted there's something wrong. He said that I had emphysema and he sent me to a CT scan and he took the x-rays off me. He put them up on their little light on the wall and he's looking at them and he shows me this thing. There followed three words that absolutely brought me to my knees, and those words were, "You have cancer." I asked myself how I'm going to tell my kids. How do I tell my kids I have cancer?
Getting bad news is really tough. Joining us now from Loma Linda University is Dr. Linda Ferry. She is the originator of Zyban, the first FDA-approved, non-nicotine pharmacological treatment for smoking cessation. Now let's quickly go to Loma Linda, California for an interview with Dr. Ferry. Join us. Dr. Ferry, we've talked about the dangers of tobacco for women, children, the unborn child, but what about the issue for men, tobacco-related conditions for men?
Well, the first effects of tobacco-related disease back in the 40s and 50s were noted only in men because women weren't smoking until after World War I to World War II is when they started to pick it up. So by the 1950s and 60s is when lung cancer rates were seen to be peaking in men and heart attack rates were increasing, and all of our chronic diseases related to cigarette smoking were accelerating between World War I and World War II, and then really high between the 40s and the 60s. And it was in 1964 that the Surgeon General's first report by Dr. Luther Terry came out and said cigarettes are harmful, causing disease, and people should stop smoking. And that was because of the effects in men. So the peak of use of tobacco and tobacco-related diseases epidemic occurred first in men, and then women have been catching up since. Mm-hmm. So emphysema, bronchitis, heart disease, lung cancer, esophageal cancer, oral cancer, tracheal cancer. All of those were first seen in men because of their early uptake of use and because of the higher amount of smoking that they smoked initially. But in 1964, the smoking rate of men plummeted. In the early 60s to late 60s, the smoking rate of men changed dramatically and started to decline. However, women's smoking rates continued to increase during that time. So men have a prostate, which women don't, which is affected by smoking. Prostate cancer is increased by cigarette smoking. Bladder cancer.
And one in six men get prostate cancer, so that's very important, isn't it? Sorry, you were saying bladder cancer?
And bladder cancer is where the toxins from cigarette smoke are excreted in the colon and in the bladder. Mm-hmm. So the bladder concentrates all of these carcinogens and has a high rate of cancer. So for some reason, a little bit higher in men than in women, probably because of their smoking difference of smoking a little bit more. And testicular cancer and even pancreatic cancer is related to cigarette smoking.
Smoking, does it impact diabetes, which is a very common problem now?
So smoking does not cause diabetes, but when you have diabetes, the vascular effects, microvascular effects of diabetes are complicated and multiplied by cigarette smoking.
So it's just a terrible combination.
Yeah, you're more likely to have your toes, your feet, your legs cut off, have vascular disease, have strokes, have kidney failure if you're going to smoke while you have diabetes.
So it's all pretty bleak. Tell me, if someone was to stop using tobacco, are they able to reduce their risks of all these outcomes, these really bleak outcomes that we're talking about, and premature death?
So remember, tobacco is the number one cause of death, not just in the United States. Our death rates haven't changed too much, but the death rates in the rest of the world are still accelerating from tobacco use being sent to developing countries by the tobacco industry. But aside from that global picture, which is pretty gloomy right now, the public health community is trying to reduce the effects of tobacco on a developing world. In Canada, in Australia, in Western Europe, in the United States, smoking rates have begun to plane out and to decline. We have not seen much decline in the last 3 to 5 years in the United States. And so that's a problem we'll talk about later, about why. Why are people not quitting? But the ability to quit smoking and the effects when you stop smoking begin the first 24 hours.
Wow.
In fact, 24 hours after you smoke your last cigarette, your carbon monoxide levels begin to plummet, the norepinephrine stimulating your heart and causing irregularities in your heart rate begins to decrease, and the rate of having sudden death falls 20%. In the first 24 hours, it falls 50%. So the likelihood that you're just going to keel over in the shopping mall because of a heart attack is reduced 50% in the first day. And every day, it gets less and less. So some effects are very dramatic and occur right away. Others take weeks or months. Or in the rate of cancer, the likelihood of getting cancer declines over years. But within 3 to 5 years of quitting smoking, your likelihood of having a heart attack is almost back to what it was back when you first started smoking.
That's really good news. What about for someone who has smoked, say they started smoking at 13, they're now 65 or 68, you know, that's 50-some years under the bridge. Is it too late?
So some people say, I have smoked too long. The doctor says, I have this disease and that disease from smoking. I might as well just ride it out. Nothing's going to make any difference for me. And the evidence is that anyone who quits achieves benefits within weeks to months. You don't even need to wait 10 or 15 years to see benefits. So no matter what your age is, no matter how severe your addiction is, quitting smoking makes people feel better. And I have patients, I treat between 500 and 800 new patients every year in my tobacco treatment program. And my patients come back to me within 1 to 2 weeks saying, oh, this is better in my life. I'm smelling better. I can taste food better. I'm not having cramps in my legs anymore when I walk. My energy is improved. I can breathe better. I mean, within weeks. So there's almost no one who won't have personal perceived benefits from quitting smoking within weeks to months of the time they quit smoking. So I encourage anyone to go out and find out what's their barrier to quitting, how to overcome that, and get help to quit.
How many people quit each year?
So in the United States, we have 1 to 3% of people who, trying to do it on their own, can successfully quit a year. Mm-hmm. So that's 1 to 3% of 46 million people. So when you do the math, that's really a lot of people.
That is a lot.
But it's not millions of people.
Mm-hmm.
It's about 400,000 plus people who quit smoking.
Wow.
It's a little bit hard to get the accurate estimate on that. The problem is that that number is filled up with teenagers who graduate from high school at age 18 and now get counted in the adult population. And so we might have 400,000 people die every year from tobacco-related illness. A few hundred thousand people quit smoking, but we have that same number of people turning 18 to 20 who now get counted in our values. So we aren't making any progress. We're going a fraction of a percent every year lower or staying the same. In the United States, we're not making much progress. Other places are making much more progress than we are right now.
Well, we need to explore that. Let's take a break. If you have a friend or loved one who's thinking of quitting, this program may help them on their way. Well, we still have lots to cover with Dr. Ferry on how to stop smoking. And on today's show, we have a healthy Baba Ganoush spread for you and a practical demonstration. All that and more to come after a short break. Stay tuned.
All day long, I solve problems. It's nuts and bolts and grease. And I love it. But at the end of the day, I think about the world's problems. I wonder why we're all here and how it will end. And I found something that makes sense of it all. It takes the nuts and bolts of history and paints a bigger picture. Now, I have hope.
Welcome back to Go Healthy for Good. We're in the kitchen with Phil today. Phil, how are you doing?
I'm doing terrific.
Good. We're going to make my favorite recipe today.
I'm looking forward to the cheesecake, right?
Cheesecake. Oh, you found out. No, we're making baba ganoush.
Oh, that sounds great. I love that.
Yeah, eggplant, one of my favorite foods.
Yeah, and it's a Mediterranean dish, so it's one that I don't get very often unless I make it or go out of my way.
That's exactly right. Yeah, it's kind of special that way. And Mediterranean diet is good for you, so this is something that we should eat.
Excellent. Well, it sounds really great.
So why don't you tell our viewers what's in it?
Excellent. So basically, we'll start out with 3 medium-sized eggplants, 1/2 cup of tahini, 1 1/4 teaspoons coarse salt, 3 tablespoons freshly squeezed lemon juice, 3 cloves of garlic, 1 tablespoon olive oil, and 1/2 bunch of parsley or cilantro leaves.
So which is your favorite, cilantro or parsley?
You know, I'm one of those that loves the taste of cilantro.
Oh, I'm in the same boat. So what we've done is we've taken our eggplant and we take this one. We just cut the top off. I pierce it once, because I made this once without, forgot to pierce it, and the whole eggplant exploded in the oven. So I learned the hard way that you have to just pierce it, just a single pierce with the knife, and you pop it in for 30 minutes. And when it comes out, it's nice and soft, and so we just split that in half and peel the pulp out. We want to leave the skin behind because it's a little bit tough. So while I'm doing this, why don't you put the rest of the ingredients in the blender?
Excellent.
And it all goes in together, which is another nice thing about this recipe. It's so easy.
You know, a fun fact. Yeah. I heard that back in the Middle Ages and medieval times, eggplant was considered the source of ailments. And so people would actually try and avoid it. And now, since then, we found that it's full of nutritional value.
That is fascinating because, in fact, it's one of the nightshade group.
Now, what do you mean by nightshade?
Nightshades, you know, deadly nightshade is a poison. But potatoes, tomatoes, eggplant, and all the peppers are all nightshade foods. And so some people are allergic. They get arthritis from eating the nightshades. So I wonder if that's how that...
That makes a lot of sense.
Yeah. You can see how that just peels right off. I'm not too fussy if I put a little bit of skin in. But you know when you've cooked it well because it just peels. So I just do this at the top.
Just a cut on each side and then
yeah,
a cut kind
through
of loosen
there,
it.
Loosen it, and then we are good to go.
Oh, that looks good.
Mmm.
Now, is this ready to?
Yeah, we're going to pop that. We're going to pop that in the blender. You go ahead and do that.
Okay.
We can add this one in a minute.
You know, I've heard a lot of people confuse hummus and baba ganoush.
Right, because you've got very similar ingredients. If you just give it a shake, actually, it'll just keep going. Yeah. You want to add this one now that you're stopped?
We've created a little bit more room.
And the reason that you confuse hummus and baba ganoush is because, you know, I should really cut that up a little bit probably, is because the only difference in the recipes is that you're using eggplant instead of chickpeas. Otherwise, you've got tahini, garlic, salt, and lemon juice.
So it's basically the same.
Cheers.
And tahini being sesame seeds that are ground up. So you've got a lot of nutritional value in there as well.
Yeah, lots of calcium.
Well, I think we might be ground up here.
You think we are? Excellent. Oh, we are. That is just what the doctor ordered. Thank you. Can you pass me the wiper and I'm going to...
Sure.
Now we can... We didn't add the... olive oil, but you could drizzle that over the top when you serve it and then you mix it in and it just has that lovely Mediterranean feel. So here we are. We might serve it with, I like mine in pita bread or as a dip. How do you like yours?
You know, I love fresh vegetables and so I love just dipping it into the baba ganoush and tasting all those flavors. So I'm going to grab a pepper.
I'm going to go for an asparagus.
Mmm. It's delicious, and it's very easy to make.
It is. Apart from throwing it in the oven, it really just takes a few minutes to make. Now let's catch the next stage of Greg's journey.
I went to this lung function test, and there's all these fancy lung things where they pump air into your lungs, and you blow, and you huff, and you cough. And at the end of it, I asked the question of the lady. I just puff breath for my life, I need to know. And she looked at me and she just said, you'll be fine with one lung. If my emphysema got worse, if I continued to smoke, I would never have passed the breathing test. Well, they made a decision that they would have a go at cutting the tumour out of my lung. I waved goodbye to Sharon, which is my partner. I must admit, there was tears in her eyes. And she went to put me in the bed and I said, I want to walk in. And she goes, what do you mean? I said, I want to walk in. And I'll walk in arm with you. And she said, is that what you really want to do? I said, yeah, I want to do that. And she let me and we walked in arm to that surgery and I hopped up on the bench when I got in there.
It's a helpless feeling going under the surgeon's knife. Now let's go back to Loma Linda and continue our discussion on smoking cessation with Dr. Ferry. Dr. Ferry, if we think about drug dependence, nicotine is not the first drug that springs to mind. But it is addictive, isn't it?
No. People usually think, oh, smoking is a bad habit. Yeah. People smoke because we've been brainwashed by the tobacco industry, because it's a pleasure, it's a relaxation, it's a status symbol, makes you feel macho, makes you fit in with the crowd, makes you cool. And it's just a habit. Mm. Some people label it a bad habit, but that's only a very small component of using tobacco. Tobacco is the most addictive chemical. Nicotine on a milligram per milligram basis, nicotine delivers more addictive potential to the human pleasure and reward center than any other addictive substance. It's 10 times more addictive than cocaine, heroin, and alcohol.
So tell me, you mentioned that it hits the brain within seven seconds, and literally smokers call it that hit. But what are the withdrawal symptoms?
Well, withdrawal symptoms will start for heavily addicted smokers within 2 to 4 hours. For people who have lower addictive potential, it will be 6 to 12 hours, 18 hours, 24 hours before their withdrawal symptoms kick in. So it depends on whether you're just lighting up one cigarette a day, 4 cigarettes a day. You don't get much of a hit, so you don't miss it very much. But people who are smoking 1, 2, or 3 packs a day, their nicotine levels shift dramatically in the course of the day, and their withdrawal symptoms are much more pronounced. And those withdrawal symptoms drive you to reach out for the next hit of nicotine so that you can, quote, feel okay again.
Right. So let's run through what those symptoms actually are.
So nicotine withdrawal symptoms are unique for each person. You would have different withdrawal symptoms than I would because of our makeup, DNA, and chemistry. But there's several nicotine withdrawal symptom lists that someone could find on the internet very easily. And you can look through the list of which pattern of withdrawal symptoms you have. Mm-hmm. For example, some people get sleepy when they're in withdrawal and they need nicotine to be stimulated. Other people need nicotine to relax them and create the chemistry that allows them to feel calm. Some people use nicotine primarily for the stimulating effect or the pleasurable effect. So based on what you use nicotine for and what your brain is most sensitive to, you get the opposite effect when you quit. So you feel irritable, you feel tense, you can't sleep, you can't think, you can't concentrate without that norepinephrine stimulating effect, or you just feel terrible until you get your next hit. You don't feel good. You don't have pleasure without that. So some people, it doesn't bother them very much. They can just keep themselves busy on the computer or play a musical instrument or play with their grandkids or walk their dog or make supper, and it distracts them from their withdrawal symptoms because theirs are not severe. Other people on the spectrum, they can't do anything productive until they have their next cigarette.
And how long do those withdrawal symptoms last? Well, if someone was to stop cold turkey.
When someone quits using tobacco in every form and doesn't use nicotine replacement therapy, one of the medications to quit smoking, the symptoms will get worse for day 3 to day 5, will peak at day 5 to day 7, and will start to improve in day 7 to day 14, somewhere in that pattern. Some people get worse and better and worse and better and worse and then better, so everyone's a little different. But usually within that first 2 weeks is when your withdrawal symptoms will peak and then will improve. But for some people, it may last 2 to 6 months before their brains actually adjust to life without tobacco.
Wow. And is that dependent upon how long they've smoked, how much they smoke, or it's really an individual thing and not very predictable?
It depends on how early they smoked. I have patients who started smoking at age 5. It depends on your grandparents and your parents, the DNA you got about how addicted you are. If you have a strongly addicted family, you're very likely to use a lot of tobacco and have very severe withdrawal symptoms.
So a few of those things may be predictable.
Yeah.
Thank you. Take the Fagerstrom test. It predicts your level of addiction. You'll find it on our website, hopetv.org/gohealthy. When we come back from the break, there's a therapy you might want to try when you're going through withdrawal. But first, let's take a look at the latest research on smoking from Johns Hopkins University, Bloomberg School of Public Health. Welcome to today's medical news report. We're at Johns Hopkins with Dr. Anna Navas. And Dr. Navas, you've done some research recently looking at the effect of tobacco smoke on young people and their kidneys. And this was pretty alarming. Tell us a little bit about this research.
So in this study, we were very interested in learning about the early effects of secondhand smoke and active smoking in kidney function in young people. So with respect to the health effects, we know that both secondhand smoke and active smoking are bad for health. We know a lot about the carcinogenic effects. We know the respiratory health effects with asthma. That's a major concern for young people who smoke and also who are exposed to tobacco smoke.
True.
But what we didn't really know is about what is there an early effect on kidney function. We know that's true for adults, but we didn't know how early these kidney effects could be starting. So we did a research study using data from a survey in the United States that is called NHANES. Mm-hmm. And in that study, we look at the relationship between cotinine, that is a biomarker of both secondhand smoke and active smoking, and kidney function. And you can see in this figure that as a kidney function as cotinine levels increase, so that means higher levels of secondhand smoke and also higher levels of active smoking, your kidney function, that is called here renal function, decreases. Mm-hmm. And the dose response is very linear. That means that there is not a threshold level, there is not a safe level that you could smoke. That means any amount of tobacco smoke is going to have an impact potentially on your kidneys.
So there's no safe level for kidneys for a smoker.
It doesn't seem that there is.
For a secondhand smoke, either.
For secondhand smoke, either. So in the study, and you can see this in this table, we categorized people, those who were unexposed, completely not at all exposed to tobacco, those who were exposed to secondhand smoke, and those who were active smokers. And we could see that at either level, at any level of secondhand smoke, we have always this negative this decrease in kidney function. So there is no safe level of exposure to tobacco smoke. For the kidneys, and I would say for other outcomes, it's been shown the same thing, for cardiovascular disease, for cancer, for respiratory disease. So this is just a confirmation that it's also true for the kidneys.
I see that secondhand smokers have almost as much decrease in renal function as active smokers. That's a really powerful message for young people, isn't it?
It is important, especially because young people have the power to tell people who are around them not to smoke. Mm. So if in this study we look at adolescents, no? With very young people, it's hard for them to tell their parents, don't smoke around me. But if you are already 12, 15, you can say that, no? And
yes.
I think it's really important, because then the parents can actually say, okay, I'm really bothering my children, no? So I should really not smoke around them. And even if it's hard to quit, you can always smoke outside your house, you can smoke when you are far away from your children, but please don't smoke around young people.
Thank you.
Thank you.
There is a garden in every childhood, an enchanted place where colors are brighter, the air softer, and the morning more fragrant than ever.
Of all life's seasons, childhood is the most beautiful.
Children are the living messages we send to a time we will not see.
Blessed indeed is the man who hears many gentle voices call him Father.
A child can ask 1,000 questions that the wisest man cannot answer.
When I approach a child, I have two thoughts: affection for what he is today and respect for what he can become.
There are no seven wonders of the world in the eyes of a child. there are 7 million.
Children are one-third of our population and all of our future.
He called a little child to him and placed the child among them. And he said, "Truly, I tell you, unless you change and become like little children, you will never enter the kingdom of heaven. Therefore, whoever takes the lowly position of this child is the greatest in the kingdom of heaven. And whoever welcomes one such child in my name welcomes me."
Today about hydrotherapy or water treatment, and joining us now is Daniel McKibben. He's a massage therapist and a hydrotherapist. Daniel, we're looking at a steam tent here. Why might we want to use steam?
Well, we want to use steam on several different things. One would be sickness, colds, flus, that type of thing. It'll fever the body and help kill the infection. Another one would be for detoxing from nicotine or caffeine or other heavier drugs. So it's got a really good use to it.
And then people use steam saunas for relaxation, and some people use them for weight loss, although that's more about dehydration, isn't it?
Yes, it is. It is.
Well, let's pretend our young friend here, Daniel Krauss, has a flu. He's feeling achy and feverish and just generally not well. We're going to pop him in here.
Okay, Daniel, why don't you jump in here, and we're going to steam you. You can see the steam coming out as we unzip it here. And this is a really nice portable steam unit. It's got a boiler right behind it that's putting steam right into it. You can get them online. They're really, really nice units.
And so we're going to pop that towel around, try and seal it off so the steam doesn't all come over his face.
And Daniel is now just really steaming up well. He'll be cool as he gets in, but then after a minute or two, he's going to start feeling good. How do you feel right now, Daniel?
Hot.
Hot, already feeling hot. Well, that's fantastic. And because Daniel's feeling hot, we are going to want to cool his head down.
Right. And what he might wear in a steam tent might be swimmers, t-shirt and shorts, as he's wearing, or even less. So now, you're cooling his head. Why do you want to do that?
We're cooling it because we want to keep the brain cool so he doesn't pass out, and on extremes they can, you know, even get worse headaches, you know, that type of thing.
Right. And so it's really important to keep the brain cool. You do not want to let the brain heat up. And, you know, sometimes if they get very hot in here, you can even cool around the back of the neck, can't you?
That's exactly right.
Rather than just the forehead.
That's exactly right.
Now, he's sweating a lot, isn't he?
He is going to be sweating a lot during this treatment, and so we want to replace that water. And so the way we replace that water is we're just going to have him drink all through the treatment and even after the treatment before he gets into the steam tent. And Daniel's doing really well. How's that water taste for you, Daniel?
Good.
Good and good and refreshing.
Good and refreshing. Lovely. And how long would you keep someone in a steam tent like this?
We want to keep them in 20 to 30 minutes. You can go longer or shorter, but 20 minutes, not any less than that. Mm. And after they're done with their 20-minute time, you want to have them have a cool shower or a cold shower.
And then now, when you sweat as much as you do inside a steam tent, what's happening to the pores in your skin?
The pores are opening up, and they're releasing the toxins and a lot of water and sweat. And so this is one of the real advantages to taking a steam bath. And sometimes we even put a few herbs in the steam here, and they come out, and it smells good. And if they have congestion in their throat or lungs or sinuses, that steam will come up, and they can breathe out. So that's
so
it.
So things like eucalyptus oil or peppermint oil.
Exactly.
Menthol. Oh, I could almost put that in now. I can imagine it smelling wonderful and being very therapeutic.
Very therapeutic.
Now, when the 20 minutes is up and young Daniel hops out, what would he do then? What do you typically do at the end of that steam? You've got the pores wide open.
We always finish our treatments with a cold. Mm. And so we'll bring him out. I'll do a cold mitten friction on him. You don't have to do that. And if you don't have the cold mitten friction or don't want to, just take a cool or a cold shower.
So it would be like a washcloth, really just frictioning the skin and just encouraging
circulation. Because the circulation is kind of slowed down by the heat. Heat kind of slows it down, cold stimulates it. And so we've slowed the circulation down here. And so that's why, I don't know how you feel, Daniel, but do you feel any relaxed or anything like that?
I feel relaxed, but very hot.
Very hot, okay. And so the heat will slow down circulation, cold will stimulate it. So we want to re-stimulate the circulation after the treatment is done.
So as we do that, and then the pores are open, you're going to want to have a good shower and wash the toxins off your skin, get them sent down the drain, and then what do you do next? You would rest.
And then you want to rest for at least 30 minutes, 45 to an hour is even better. Mm. You've got the immunity stimulated now. We want to take advantage of the immune system.
Okay. So the reason that we're putting someone who has a mild fever into a fever is that the immune system produces the fever to actually encourage the body to fight infection. And so by putting someone in bed to rest afterwards, it's giving that immune system time to really focus on just doing that. If Daniel was to run out and play right after his therapy, then all that blood would simply go to his muscles and supply that need rather than supplying the need of the infection and fighting that. So I hope that's been useful for you.
Well, Daniel, you look quite red here. I think you're turning into a lobster. Why don't we get you out of here before you're cooked?
All right. There you go.
So how do you feel, Daniel?
Hot. Cold.
Now you're out in the cold atmosphere. It feels really cold out here, doesn't it?
Well, thanks for being our lobster today.
Researchers for the Adventist Health Study wonder, can a vegetarian diet provide adequate vitamin D, which is found primarily in animal products? Interestingly, no real difference was found in vitamin D levels based on diet. Researchers found instead that the people with the highest vitamin D levels were those who spent enough time in the sun. Safe but regular sun exposure seems to be the best way to get your vitamin D. Regular time outside in the sun is another ageless advantage.
Welcome back. Now it's time to answer your questions that you've texted, called, or posted on our Facebook page. Eunice posted on Facebook, "I'm learning so much from your program. Thanks for sharing." Thanks, Eunice. We enjoy that encouragement. Someone else posted, "Calcium supplements for vegans. What's your answer?" Well, vegans are more at risk for bone fractures, possibly because a vegan diet has lower calcium. Those vegans in this particular study who got at least 525 milligrams of calcium a day were not at increased risk. So you need to look at how much you're getting, and if you're not getting enough, then take a supplement. But take probably only 500 milligrams a day, because too much may increase the risk of cardiovascular disease and kidney stones. And if you're on medications, be sure that they're not going to interfere with the meds you're taking. Jacinth posted on Facebook, "Is there any treatment for premature graying of the hair?" Well, hair follicles make pigment called melanin, and that gives your hair its colour. Genetics actually determine at what age that change begins. So there's no vitamins or supplements that will stop it. But the antioxidants like vitamin A, vitamin E, they're going to keep your hair healthy. Try some spirulina, stop smoking, and be sure you're not vitamin deficient, because that can be associated with graying of the hair if it's premature. Now, there are also autoimmune conditions that put you at risk of premature graying and some medications. So just tease those around and see if you're on any of those things. Godfrey posted on Facebook, "Can there be an exercise for my mind?" Great question, Godfrey. And yes, there are. There are a number of websites that offer brain exercises. And one that I like is a free one, arlenetaylor.org. I'll spell that for you, arlenetaylor.org. And there are about five different things that these brain exercises do. They train your memory. That's important. You can do that yourself. Learn some new skills. Brush your teeth with the other hand. Memorize scripture. Attention is another one, and that's really necessary all through the day. So change things around. Drive to work a different route. Multitask, like listen to an audiobook while you're out jogging. Language skills are important, and you might think you know all the words you need, but why don't you grab a dictionary and read an article in the newspaper or something in depth? Look up every word that you're not familiar with and be sure you really do know the answers to them. There's visual spatial capacity. So play games of remembering five items when you walk into a room. Then when you leave, remind yourself what those five were. If you don't remember, ooh, go back. And then an hour later, remember those five things. Then there's problem solving. Work out how to solve something the most efficient way possible. Increase your social interactions, because as we converse with others, we actually enhance that. So thanks for sending all those questions. Call us with your health question, 855-400-HEALTHY, and remember you can text us or post your questions on our Facebook page. With Dr. Ferry, we're going to explore the medications available to help nicotine withdrawal right after this Bon Appetit. Oranges are, well, orange, inside and out. They can come with thick skin, thin skin. They can be bitter oranges or sweet. Oranges originated somewhere in Asia, between southern China and Indonesia. Then they spread to India and on to the rest of the world. Now Brazil and Florida are the main growers of oranges. Oranges are a great source of potassium, magnesium, folate, of course vitamin C, and fiber. One medium orange contains 65 calories. So and you can't eat too many at once, so they're a great way to go low on calories. Orange zest is a secret ingredient you can put in many recipes, but only get the orange part. Don't go below because the pith or the white part becomes bitter. You know, there's nothing like freshly squeezed orange juice to wake your taste buds up in the morning. Bon Appetit. Dr. Ferry, you just mentioned nicotine replacement to help with those addictions, those cravings. Tell us about nicotine replacement. What's out there? What is there that medication-wise that can help someone to quit?
So there are three classes of medications to help people stop smoking. The first ones that came out were nicotine replacement products. The first one was the nicotine gum. That came out in the mid to late 80s. And you would open up the package, take a piece of nicotine gum, put it in your mouth, chew it 5 to 8 times, it gets absorbed in your cheek. Mm. You use as many pieces of gum as you need to during the day because it gets absorbed fairly rapidly in the mouth. By every time you squeeze it between your teeth, it releases more nicotine, and you begin to learn over time how much it takes to calm down your withdrawal symptoms. The next one that came out was...
So that can give you the quick hit.
Yeah. Mm. We call that rescue nicotine. When you're having a craving and you need
to be rescued,
you get your nicotine out of your gum and you can dose it to your need. The controller medication is the nicotine patch. The nicotine patch comes in 3 sizes and you can dose it based on how much nicotine your brain needs to feel calm and not have withdrawal symptoms. So you would take the backing off of it, you would put it on your skin, on your upper arms, your upper chest, and it gets absorbed slowly over 24 hours to control continuously the level of nicotine that your brain needs to suppress nicotine withdrawal symptoms. So your brain's getting enough, but not what it got from smoking. Mm-mm. And that's one of the differences of nicotine replacement therapy. There is also a lozenge like the gum that dissolves slowly in the mouth for people who don't have good teeth and can't chew.
I think it tastes a little better too, doesn't it?
So it has many different flavors. You can get the gum and the lozenge in several flavors.
Okay.
Another one is the nicotrol inhaler. And the nicotine inhaler, you take one of the cartridges out of the little blister pack. Mm-hmm. You use this, which is a gel-filled matrix. You open up your cartridge, you put it inside, and then you puff into your mouth. So it's not an inhaler into your lungs like a cigarette. That's one of the mistakes that people make, is they think, oh, this is my cigarette, and they take a long draw hit, and then they cough, and they say, my throat is raw. This is really a puffer, just like the gum and the lozenge being absorbed in the mouth. And the puffer is great for people who are handlers, right? They used to have a cigarette that they did this with, And now they get their nicotine from a puffer. So people who are handlers and are fiddling, just like you are right now with that puffer, handlers love the puffer.
Yes, I've heard them just say how, and this is part of the addiction, isn't it? The physical handling.
Not everyone's a handler. So all of the forms of nicotine replacement, including the nasal spray, which is the most quickly absorbed through the nasal mucosa, goes to the brain more quickly than from the mouth. That brain chemistry response to nicotine replacement doesn't make you feel like a cigarette, doesn't give you the high and the boost, but it does suppress the withdrawal symptoms so that your brain can readjust the chemical balance, just like a computer rebooting itself when it's gotten into a bad cycle. And after a few weeks to a few months of tapering off to lower and lower amounts of nicotine replacement, the brain goes through readjustment from low levels, and the success rate is double or more the likelihood of quitting smoking without nicotine replacement.
Right. So now, why move from this to this? It's still nicotine, isn't it?
It is nicotine, but this is nicotine plus 4,000 chemicals that are trying to kill you.
Right.
This is pure chemical, medical-grade nicotine that's been proven to be safe and effective by the Food and Drug Administration.
So this is a dirty way to deliver nicotine, which is the addictive substance in here. This is the clean way to deliver the addiction and get rid of the other 4,000 dirty things.
Right.
Okay. Great.
Now, there's something else about that is people will say, oh, well, I just bought electronic cigarettes. So that isn't that a safe way to substitute for burning tobacco? And the reality is the Food and Drug Administration and the National Institutes of Health have done studies on a few of the brands of the electronic cigarettes that just heat up a gel matrix of tobacco that doesn't burn and they say are safer. It's not safer. It still has carcinogens, and it's made of tobacco. So don't trust anything the tobacco industry makes trying to sell you so that they don't lose you as a customer trading it in for your cigarette. They are not a safe way, and they have never been proven to help people stop smoking.
And so nicotine replacement is not made by the tobacco industry.
It is not.
So you mentioned three medications that help. What else do you have?
So the other two classes are pills, bupropion, or Wellbutrin when it's used for depression, Zyban for smoking, and varenicline or Chantix.
Okay.
And learning about those two oral medications also is the same effect of controlling withdrawal symptoms, just used in a different way.
We'll come back to that. Thank you.
Yep, good.
We're going to finish this discussion about medications for smoking cessation right after the break. Don't go away.
A movement toward daily scripture reading is underway. It's called Revived by His Word. The plan? To read one chapter of the Bible per day. The goal? To direct the attention of participants to the importance of knowing Jesus through His Word.
Young adults from around the world are coming together in one city. Their mission? Rolling up their sleeves and hitting the streets to help others wherever and whenever they are needed. Follow these urban missionaries as they share their love and their time with people in need. Join them as they create lifelong friendships and share God's love this year in New York City. 1 year in mission, NY13.
Welcome back. Remember to call us with your health question, 855-400-HEALTHY. Now, before we go to Loma Linda, California, to continue our interview with Dr. Ferry, let's watch the end of Greg's story.
It wasn't a pleasant awakening. It wasn't as nice as going in, but I knew I was alive. So I was very positive in there. My grandkids came in, made me more determined, yeah, to get up and walk, you know. The doctor pulled the curtains across and he looked at me and said, "You have the best possible result after a lung surgery that anyone could ever ask for." They decided that they wanted to do some precautionary chemo. I was in hospital for 15 days of those 18 treatments. I had so much negativity at one stage I couldn't even stand myself for a while. I don't blame anyone but myself. I lit the cigarettes. I smoked for the 41 years. If I went back to that first cigarette, knowing what I know now, there wouldn't be a first cigarette. I wouldn't wish this on anybody. My lung, it's been cut and the tumour removed. Right now is what they call stable. I call my oncologist my guardian angel. He calls me a miracle in progress. I think they had in their mind that I was just not going to ever make it past 5 years, no matter what happened. Well, I'm here to tell you that I will walk my three grandchildren into school. I can certainly enjoy quality time with them, and I'm so thankful for that. I get a good thrill out of their laughing, and they're having a ball, and they're with their pop, and I think that's pretty special. The youngest one, I spend time with him as much as I can. I don't expect him to know who I am yet, but I'll be around. He'll know. He'll know in the end.
There's nothing like being with your pop. Let's get the last piece of advice Dr. Ferry has for us. Dr. Ferry, you were mentioning the oral medication that can help someone who's going through smoking cessation. Tell us more about those.
Okay, so there are three classes of medicine. We've just covered the nicotine replacement therapy, most of which is over-the-counter. You can buy it in any pharmacy and even some grocery stores. The two pill medications, the oral medications, are prescription only. One of them is used also to control mood in people with depression or other psychiatric disorders. And the second one is exclusively used for tobacco dependence. Bupropion, Wellbutrin is the brand name, or Zyban is the name designed for smoking, came out in 1997. Varenicline, or Chantix in the United States, it's also called Champix in the UK, that medication just came out 4 years ago. And so that's the new medication most people will see advertisements for on TV. That's what's being promoted now.
So can you take the nicotine replacement with those? Would anyone take all three? How would you manage all of that?
You wouldn't take all three. So the easy way to understand is however much you smoked and gave nicotine to your brain, that's what you're going to match with nicotine replacement.
Okay.
So a cigarette is going to give 1 milligram of nicotine for every cigarette you smoke, an approximate estimate. So if you smoke a pack of cigarettes, that's going to be 20, and that's going to be, you would dose the patch to give you your brain the equivalent of 20 milligrams of nicotine. So there's a 21 milligram patch that you would use.
Which is this one?
Or if you smoked 10 cigarettes a day, you might use the 14 milligram patch. Or if you smoked 4 to 7 cigarettes a day, you might use the 7 milligram patch. So you're going to give your brain enough nicotine so that you feel good and you aren't missing it, right? That's the point of nicotine replacement. So it's really to quell nicotine withdrawal symptoms. The medications, the two classes of oral treatment as opposed to just give your brain what it wants, nicotine to calm it down, the other two medications seem to work equally well in women, but nicotine replacement works better in men. Another one of the gender inequalities about using tobacco. The first medication that came out in 1997 is bupropion or Zyban, and that oral medication is used in a different dosage than you would use for mental health depression issues. And you would take one pill in the morning for about 3 to 5 to 7 days, get used to the effects of that medicine, and then double it, take it morning and evening. And that gives you a steady state dose of this medication to control your withdrawal symptoms. And there are several doses of that that you can use if people can't tolerate the full effect.
Mm.
The second medication...
And how long would you take that?
Well, you take it as long as your brain needs to get through withdrawal. Like we said, withdrawal might last 2 to 6 weeks, so you'd certainly stay on it that long, and then you'd want to give your brain a vacation for a while to really calm down. So most people will stay on it 10 weeks, 12 weeks. That's what the studies were done. But if someone's a high-risk smoker, they might want to stay on it 6 months to a year to make sure their brain chemistry really simmers down to a non-addictive state. And then when they go off, you aren't addicted to this medication. This is not nicotine.
Any side effects?
The side effects of smoking are death. 50% of people who smoke are going to die 10, 20, or 30 years before smoking. And that's what most smokers are not willing to admit. Plus all the health consequences that if you don't die early, you live miserably with all the health consequences of smoking. So the risks of picking this up versus picking this up is it's completely immeasurable.
Right.
So, of course, there's a risk to taking aspirin and Tylenol, especially in the wrong dose. So the most common side effect someone will notice is a dry mouth. You know, I've never had one of my patients die of a dry mouth.
No. You know, I've had smokers complain of a dry mouth.
And some upset stomach, some difficulty sleeping. The second medication has very similar side effects because they work equally well in helping people quit, depending on how it's chosen for them. Mm. And you just have to decide what's the right medicine for the right person.
Absolutely. Well, thank you for all this wonderful information. And it's been great having you on the show today.
Thank you.
It's sobering to think what the side effects of these are. Don't stay chained to your habit. Get ready to choose a quit date. Then see your doctor for a prescription of the medications that will double your chance of success. Don't forget the nicotine replacement. It all helps in the end. Thanks for joining us on Go Healthy for Good. On tomorrow's show, we have a load of practical advice to get you on your way to being smoke-free. I'll see you then.